Excellent. Welcome to the Guitar Channel. I am super happy to welcome you a new interview. I have on the other side of the Zoom connection the one and only Marc Lethierry. Marc, how are you doing today, this morning for you?
I'm very well. I should say bonjour, comment ça va?
Yeah, okay, all right. Let's do
and
this
in French.
And
that's the extent of the French.
Okay.
Yeah, ready?
You have the perfect accent.
Interview.
Your accent is very good.
Well,
oh, bonjour, comment
thank
ça va?
You. You know, I studied French in school for a few years and got like not bad at it. Like
okay.
Somewhat conversation. Like I can still kind of give directions to a cab driver if I need to, but I beyond that, you know, it's pretty need some practice.
Okay. Do you know a couple of bad words in French? You have to, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I know.
Come on.
Nailed.
Wow.
Nailed.
Merde is an easy
and then,
one. Okay.
I know. Well, that, yeah, I know. That's about the extent.
Okay.
You'll have to teach me some after the cameras are off.
All right, Marc, I am very happy to have you on the show. So last time we met was, first time we met was in 2017, so 4 years, 4 years ago, lifetime ago, it seems now. It was during the Winter Nam, and you were playing at the X-Jam concert. So we are going to talk about the pandemic and all that great stuff, but what's new since then?
Since 2017,
yes.
Wow, a lot's happened. Made a couple records, did a lot of tours. I made some records with my project, made records with Snarky Puppy and his band, the Fearless Flyers, did a lot of sessions for people, played on a lot of other great projects with folks, traveled all over the globe. Went to Asia, went to South America, went to Europe. What else? Had a kid. That's pretty important.
Oh yeah.
You know, became a dad, which obviously changes everything. You know, launched a signature guitar. Man, you should have asked me this ahead of time. I would have written down all the things that happened. But.
No, the idea was really to come up with the main turning points, you know, not to
yeah.
be, the idea is not to be exhaustive. So you have to tell me, Marc, what is the impact of the pandemic that we are all living in since... It has been a year now. So how is life
right.
For you now?
It's good. I'm in a good place. I'm in a healthy place. I've been able to be creative. I've been able to make music, stay busy, make a living, not playing live shows, but
I
doing
suppose.
Other things,
mm-hmm.
you know, doing other things like a lot of session work, a lot of sort of clinics and demos and a little bit of instruction and things like that. But you know, when everything shut down, it was tough because I just saw my calendar evaporate, and I really had to kind of refocus my priorities, but also just why I wanted to play music for a living. You know, I had to really ask myself if it was something I wanted to do and enjoyed doing, and if it was worth trying to, you know, slug it out through this season to kind of get back to normal. And you know, I'm glad I did, but it definitely took a lot of time, and you know, I'd struggled with it emotionally, but thankfully I think being home with my family kind of enabled me to get some strength back, you know, and kind of really look at what it's really all about, you know. So I'm glad it there were definitely some rough couple months there at the start, but then I started to find a good rhythm and was able to be creative and stuff. So
looking back on your life as a guitar player, do you remember the very first guitar lick, or I don't know, the guitar or guitar song or song that really got you inspired to pick up the instrument? And can you play it now?
Maybe. Well, I think the first song I ever learned was maybe like one chord. It was this Beach Boys song. Well, actually, wait a minute. It may have been a Beach Boys song. It may have been Wild Thing
mm-hmm.
by the Troggs, you know.
Right.
So that was like one of the first, and then there was this another song called Sloop John B by the Beach Boys, which is basically just like,
oh yeah, remember the melody, yes.
So now I'm able to play the melody too, but before then I could just sort of strum, you know. Turns out if you practice hard enough, kids. But then, you know, I remember I had a teacher when I was young that, you know, showed me tablature for the first time, and the first guitar tablature song I ever learned was, you know, we were doing it Smells Like Teen Spirit and all that, and Hey Joe.
Thank you.
first. Yeah, there it is. Maybe I don't really. It's been a minute since I played that one too. But so I went down the, you know, the rabbit hole of any tablature I could download and, you know,
and what I could learn from at that. At what age did you realize that, okay, this is what I want to do? I want to become a professional musician.
I was probably older than maybe some people when they have that desire. I always knew I wanted to do it for the rest of my life, but I was probably maybe around 19, 20, 21 when I really thought, like, I wanted to try it out as a job. I still didn't know how I was going to do it. That didn't really become apparent until I was finishing my senior year of college. And so, I was 21. And I had formed enough connections in the local music scene that I thought I could at least stay busy. I didn't know what kind of income it was going to generate, but I knew I could at least have gigs and stuff to do. And so that's kind of how I decided to make a go of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of it just became, I was just more aware of what you could do to make a living playing music without necessarily being a rock and roll star.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and are you able to identify the main, very important encounters you had that really, that were big step up, you know, in your career?
Sure. Yeah. I think as soon as I, I think from the beginning, when I started pursuing it full time, really, I was able to kind of find the scenes that I knew were going to be what I really wanted to do and participate in. I tried doing like country music in Texas, and that kind of wasn't really my thing. I mean, I can play it, but it wasn't really where my heart was. My heart was in R&B and funk and groove music and rock. And so I kind of like served those two scenes as best I could when I was young, making myself available to all kinds of artists and singers and producers and churches and things like that. I did a lot of gospel music. And so getting into those scenes, I was meeting people that were playing with Kirk Franklin and Fred Hammond and these big gospel stars. But then on the other hand, people that were also working with Erykah Badu and, Roy Hargrove and these hip hop and jazz icons. And so, I just sort of made myself available as the guitar player that wanted to do that stuff and could kind of do that stuff. And so there were some great jam sessions playing with Erykah Badu's band where I met some people in that camp and then eventually ended up in that band. Ended up on records with Kirk Franklin, Fred Hammond, because of my friends who I was playing with and connecting with. There's so many, we could have a whole interview on just the names and the people that I met along the way that were instrumental.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are in Snarky Puppy.
Cool.
Guys like Robert C. Wright and Sean Martin, Bobby Sparks, and players like that who were kind of took me under their wing, put me on a lot of gigs.
Mm-hmm.
And thankfully, I did good enough that they put me on more of them. Mm-hmm. R.C. Williams, from Erykah's band.
And regarding guitar players, who would be, I don't know, let's say the two or three main musician you would put in your pinnacle of guitar players?
Sure. I think it's probably Prince,
okay,
Jeff Beck, and Eddie Van Halen.
Good trio.
Yeah, I think I could listen to those three just from a guitar perspective and be cool.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I know that, but I mean, gosh, that's a hard question, So, but I'll stand by that answer, I think.
All right. Before we talk about the baritone session volume 2, I would like you,
sure,
to tell me a little bit more about that beautiful red guitar you are holding and about the collaboration or discussion you had,
yeah,
with Paul Reed-Smith to come up with that.
Absolutely. Well, I'll start it off by saying this. When Paul Reed-Smith says he wants to design a guitar with you, you say yes.
Okay. I try to remember that. Okay.
Because he's a brilliant, just madman of a guitar designer.
Mm.
And to get inside his head and really push buttons and tweak and measure and do resistor changes and wiring coil things and all these just engineering things that I don't understand because I just, you know, I just play the dang thing, right? It was a really, really great experience to get in there and get my hands dirty with him and the whole crew, because they're really just a fun family of people. And I had been a PRS player for a few years. I think we made a connection back in 2016, and I was playing their 594 model humbucker guitars. So when they approached me to do a single coil thing, I kind of had a few reservations just because I was like, well, you know, I like your humbucker stuff, but I had to kind of like slap myself and be like, dude, are you stupid? Like, what are you doing? They want to do an awesome. They want to make your They want to make your literal teenage dream come true. You dummy, like, do it. And so we did, and it was amazing. And I'm just absolutely thrilled that we were kind of able to. Well, not kind of. We were able to just take the sounds that I've hear in my head that are always changing and moving forward and growing and expanding and doing all these strange things that an artist does with their sound, and they created a guitar that I can do that with, and that, you know, you can get yourself. You know, it's kind of made so that everyone will experience the same things that I experience when I play it.
And what were the specific details you really wanted to have on the guitar? What's special about, because people are going to look at that and say, okay, right, this is yet another Super Strat just with the PRS shape. So what's different?
Right. Well, I don't know if it's the Super Strat term is funny to me, because when I hear that, I always think of a Floyd Rose and a locking tremolo, and I don't do that at all. This is a 2-point tremolo, which I wanted to have because it does a specific kind of flutter that you can't necessarily get with a six screw trem. So I wanted it to feel a certain way because I'm used to playing Fender style guitars. I mean, so I wanted that feel in the trim. It's a 25.5-inch scale, which PRS has been doing since the Silver Sky. The Mark Holcomb has a 25.5. So, and there's a certain aspect to the snap and the response that I feel like you get with that scale length. But I think what makes it special is we designed all the pickups as one kind of unit. It wasn't like we threw random things from various manufacturers and hoped that it kind of worked, right? Which is just, that's a great method to do, but we figured we would just design them all from scratch so that they all work seamlessly, because kind of the cool thing about this guitar is you can do a bunch of switching options, combining the pickups and splitting the pickups to get a whole host of sounds. And if the pickups aren't really planned to do that, they don't always sound great that way. But we wanted to make sure that all the sounds were usable.
And what's different in the wiring compared to a 5-way switch on a Strat?
Right. Well, what we did it's actually a mod that I've had on my guitars for quite a while, where you can adjust or you can mix the neck pickup and the bridge pickup, for example, which is not a sound that you normally find on a Strat. So for example, if I'm in the bridge position, and I pull up, I don't know if you can see this, but if I pull up on the middle tone control, you get both pickups. So it almost has a Telecaster quality to it.
So that's the humbucker plus the neck pickup, correct?
Yep, and then you can run the humbucker in series parallel and thin that out even more. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then, excuse me, if you have the middle tone control engaged in the second and fourth positions, you get a mix of all three, which you'll notice is much different than standard position two. It hollows it out a little bit, right? So I like that sound a lot because I do all kinds of like pop funk tracks for people. And so that particular sound, especially if you plug straight into your DAW or your console or direct, you get that really cool, like, I'll turn the reverb off and it'll sound even more authentic, right? So I love that. And so I wanted the guitar to be able to do that. And then, of course, you know, the neck and the humbucker and everything, just it's just wound all to work together.
And do you mostly use it in a clean tone, or you, can you do a crunch or dirty stuff?
With yeah, I got some crunch somewhere in here. Let's see, what is this one? I'm playing a Kemper right now, so. Your full-on humbucker
sounds good.
Thanks.
Yeah. And how was it to work with Paul? Because I had the pleasure to interview him a couple of times, and he's a tough customer to interview, because when you ask him a question, you can really see in his eyes that he's thinking about it really hard, and he can maybe sometimes answer straight, but sometimes he's going to shoot back another question. So how was it to really work closely with him?
Well, that's why I like him, because you can always tell his brain is thinking about something. He's always tweaking and wanting to discover the next thing. And I think that's what's really inspiring, and what you want in a guitar maker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They never really settle. You know, they're always trying to one-up themselves or reinvent something that they already made awesome, which is cool. So I get that. Mm-hmm. I get that.
And what did he bring as a surprise for you when you work on the guitar?
A surprise?
Yeah, or what surprises you when he brought ideas and said, oh, okay, that's interesting. Okay, let's try this, or, you know.
Yeah, well, he I learned a lot about, I think the one thing that, maybe when we were designing the pickups, about how many wiring turns and how that actually affects which frequencies and, you know, the height of the pickups. And, well, if we do this, then we have, you know, this size, because these are like slightly bigger magnets, which okay. sounds slightly different than the slightly smaller magnets. You know, the spacing, the string spacing in here versus the string spacing in here, or, I mean, they're the same, but, you know, making adjustments here and how it's going to fit with my right hand versus my left hand. And I'd never really built a guitar before, so I admit I was pretty naive. I mean, I knew the sounds I liked, but I'm not a luthier, so I just kind of was like, oh, yeah, okay. You know, we shifted... one of the early prototypes, everything was like a fraction of an inch in another direction. And so we're like, let's push it back this way. Let's push it back this way. You know, those kinds of things, like where it sat on my thigh, where it sat here, you know, the neck carve was a whole other conversation, you know?
Okay.
So there's a lot of tweaking went into it.
Excellent.
Which is what should happen.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, you know.
But I see you are still keeping all the other guitars around you, right? You're not selling anything?
Yeah. No, I'm not selling anything. No way, man. Yeah.
All right, let's talk about the baritone sessions, volume 2. So tell us the concept. So it is the other one was not volume 1, but it was the previous record. So what was the idea behind it?
Well, the idea behind it, I guess I'll back up and tell you about the first one first.
Please.
I didn't call it Volume 1 because I didn't really know what I was going to do with it. I didn't know if anyone would care about it. I didn't know if anyone would listen to it. Back in 2015, maybe it was, I'd started working more with baritone guitar in like a funk R&B groove context, which was something that I hadn't really heard anyone do. But I was playing a lot of that kind of music, as I always do. I just thought I would try it on a baritone and kind of stumbled upon this sound that I thought was pretty special. And so I started making these really just demo recordings of tracks that were maybe a minute and a half, 2 minutes at most in length, that I would play live, record it, put it on social media, just as a fun thing to kind of express, hey guys, I got this new sound, like, check it out, you know? And the response was pretty overwhelming, to the point where people were kind of expecting an album. And I was just like, well, this wasn't supposed to be an album. This was just supposed
I never
to be
said
fun.
We'd do an album. Come
yeah,
on.
exactly. And, but the more I thought about it, I was like, all right, maybe you do have a thing here. I have a problem with acceptance, right? And so I had a problem accepting that people wanted to make a guitar with me. I had a problem accepting that people wanted me to make a record of baritone music. And so so I finally said to myself, all right, cool, let's turn these into songs. Let's take these 1 minute demos and make them into full productions with live instruments, you know, other soloists, all these kinds of things. And so that became the Baritone Sessions, the first album with the fish on the cover. And that was kind of more like it. I mean, it was kind of an EP. It was short. It was maybe 25 minutes or 27 minutes or something. But everybody really dug it. And so I thought, okay, cool. Like, we can keep doing this. The process of producing it was actually fairly simple because there was not really any live band in a studio. Everything was done over the email. And so I thought, well, that's pretty simple. I can produce tracks at my studio and send them to my friends and they can play on them. And so volume two, I decided to call volume two because, yeah, there's going to be a volume three. but volume two was going to be an EP, but Joachim from Jazzline approached and said, hey, we want to do an album with you. Would you consider maybe making your next baritone thing a full length? And I was like, yeah, sure, okay. And then the pandemic hit, and I had no energy. I had no... You know, like we talked about, I was feeling pretty down in the dumps about everything. And so finally around August, I just had this kind of like explosion of creativity and was able to really write, finish, produce, record, do the whole record in the fall. And it became a big production. I think there's maybe how many people are actually playing on the record? There's a lot more. So I chose to do it as kind of a feature thing because I have so many great friends of mine that are playing on it that I, you know, it's like this song features this guy and this person. And then they're not all soloists. I mean, I'm featuring drummers and bass players and just musicians who contributed to the groove, really. Because, you know, I know that my audience is typically fans of instrumental guitar based music, and they might not know who Bobby Sparks is or Adam Deitch or Frederic Yonet, you know. So if I can give some attention to these great players, you know, I wanted to do that. So it became this kind of like almost ensemble party record with all of my friends. And it's 10 tracks now. And yeah, there's some, I mean, really, really heavy hitters.
Yes. I mean,
the
record is full of great songs and the sound is great. Do you mind picking up maybe a baritone guitar? Because I would like you.
Yeah, sure.
Possible.
If I can remember the riffs.
Okay. I would like to walk us through your composition process and how you elaborate a song. Maybe go, as you said, go from a 1 minute Instagram video to a full composition.
Oh man, that's gonna be tough.
Okay. Come on, Mark. I know you can play anything. So.
Well, the thing, you know, that's funny about making records is that I don't know if this guitar is even in tune, but you focus so hard on it while you're doing it,
yeah.
And then when it's done, you don't even think about it.
Okay.
Right? And so, like, some of these songs I wrote and recorded and then have not even picked up a guitar and played them since that happened. but obviously, once the record's out, I'm going to have to go back and, you know, get it together.
Eventually, you're going to go back on the road, hopefully, Mark.
Well, yeah. So this tune, this one's called Star Catchers. I'm going to try and remember. The main riff was like a shuffle. Mm-hmm. So I had that. I actually had that riff was written, and then I had another riff like that was like... something like that. And so I had to put those two together. And then I took that other riff. Something like that. And I metrically modulated it. So it becomes a shuffle into like this straight funk groove thing. But then I needed like a B section. So I had these like kind of, they were all in the same key and they all kind of had the same feel. And so it was like kind of a process of gluing them together.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote a melody over just like a B... or B, right? Not E. So I kind of wrote this like guitar melody thing for that. And then I kind of came up with this B section. I knew it needed a B section. set of chord changes where the bass changes a lot. I don't remember how it goes, but so I had these couple riffs floating around. I wrote a A section, a B section. There's like a bridge. As long as I have like a, with the baritone stuff, I guess I'll explain it this way. As long as I have a cool riff that I think has substance, I'll just start building off of that.
That's always the building block on which you build to
most of the time. Most of the time with this kind of music, it starts with a riff or a groove, because a lot of the tunes, the melodic content is within the groove, the riff itself, or maybe the chord progression. There isn't necessarily like an overt above everything guitar melody.
Mm-hmm.
Starcatchers is the one song on the record that kind of has that. But most of the other ones don't.
Mm-hmm. And Starcatcher is the song where Steve Lukather is playing a solo.
Right. So Steve Lukather is on the guitar. So I'm playing all the melodies and the rhythm, and then Steve jumps in for a solo in the middle.
Mm-hmm. So you came up with the idea to have Steve to play on the record? Or?
Well, not at first. Okay. It was kind of one of those things where as I was putting the album together and I was getting all these guests, friends, to play, I said, well, I went, actually, here's the true story. I was recording the solo myself, and I kept asking myself, like, what would Steve play here? What would Steve play? Because it's kind of a shuffle, you know, it's like a fastball down the middle for him. And I was playing some stuff, and I thought what I was playing was cool, but it was kind of Steve's language. And so I was like, you know what? I got all these great guests. I got all these great guests on the record anyway. What's one more? Steve and I are friends, and so I sent him an email, and I just said, hey dude, I don't know if you'd be interested in doing this at all or whatever, you know, but you mind throwing a solo on this? And he was like all about it, like
cool,
totally excited to do it. And I was like, all right, have at it, you know. It's from, you know, 2 minutes and 30 seconds to 4 minutes and whatever. And he went up to his son's studio. I don't even know what he plugged into. He was funny. He was like, yeah, I don't know, Trev got me this sound and it sounded good, so here we go. And he just sent me back this totally screaming, ripping Steve Lukather blues rock guitar solo. I was like, yep, that's it.
Yeah.
Perfect. Mm. Done.
So all the record was recorded remotely, I suppose, in the room you are basically.
So all of my guitars and bass, the bass that I played, and some keyboards that I played, save for the last track, which is all acoustic.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that. Yes, Sublight.
Yeah, so pretty much everything. Yes, all the guitars and bass and keyboards that I played were done here, mm-hmm. And then drums, some guys recorded at home, some guys went to a studio to do. And then everybody's keyboards, they all did at their own place. I think if all the bass players did it at their own place, Frederic, and Keith recorded their horns and harmonica at their own place. Jacob Collier, I think, recorded at his house. Travis Toy recorded at his house. So everyone was doing stuff in their, you know, their rooms. So for Sublight, I went to a studio to just get a better acoustic sound with no, really, I could have done it here, but you know, if the neighbor starts his lawnmower, it's like I could take his road.
Yeah.
So just for the sake of, like, you know, not losing my mind, I did it at another studio.
And what was your weapon of choice for the baritone guitar? Was that that one? Is that the Supro?
So Starcatchers is primarily this Supro.
Okay.
It's tuned to B. Mm-hmm. And then I'll just show you the other ones that I used. Sorry, that was a bit of a pop. Here we go. This is the Leonardo Bocci baritone. Oops. Actually, the guy's name is Bruno Bocci. The guitar is called the Leonardo, and this is on a bunch of tracks. This one has kind of a real clean, spanky, sparkly. Kind of sparkly sound. So I use this one with like the Fearless Flyers a lot too. And then the other one was a Dan Electro. which this, I mean, this guitar was kind of the one that started the whole baritone thing. I bought it for like a couple $100 at a guitar shop. Actually, I think I got it from reverb.com maybe, okay, or something, as just a studio tool. And then it became kind of the impetus, the sort of the beginning of the sound. And so there's a, you know, there's a bunch of tracks that have this guy on it. Right. And then the real kind of secret weapon of the record, though.
Aha, here we go.
This one's, yeah, this was the one the CIA doesn't want you to know about.
Okay. I will have to commit suicide right after you tell me, right?
But the world should know about, okay, these guitars because they're just absolutely fantastic. This is a Hybrid Guitars. That's the name of the brand. And they call this their Big Six. And what it is, it's a 20, I think it's 27, maybe 27 and a half inch scale, or it's like 25 to 20. They have a fan fret thing going on. And it's tuned a full octave down. So it's essentially a six string bass guitar. Now you can string it up to be a baritone. I have it strung up as a six string bass. So this is an E. It's just an octave lower than a regular guitar. You can also split the outputs so that you can just have the bottom three strings go through one output and the top three strings go through another if you want to play one through a bass amp or something, kind of like how Charlie Hunter does. In fact, This is Charlie Hunter's company. He's part of the company.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if you see him playing, he's playing a Hybrid Guitars model. It's not this one. But a lot of the bass parts on the record are me playing this. Because I can play, you can play bass lines like a guitar, but it's in bass register. So it's like cheating. I played regular four string bass on a couple tracks too. Mm. But what was neat about this is that it kind of sits mix wise with a baritone real well. I don't know if it's quite as like sub low heavy as like a real bass. So you can actually kind of keep room for even lower bass from like a keyboard or something if you're having this play the most of the actual like bass guitar parts. Mm-hmm. So.
And what about the sound? Were you plugged into your computer and using plugin and all that stuff? Because I see that behind you have a lot of pedals. So was it a mix of all of the above?
Yes, it was. The guitar amp sounds are all either my Kemper or a Neural DSP plugin.
Okay.
I got real hip to using plugins. Well, some of them sound really good. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of simplifies the creative process for me. I can get a sound and I can tweak it without having to like walk into another room and adjust the amp or a mic position or something. Now, having said that, there are all these beautiful amps right here that I use all the time. I use them live. I use them in studio sessions all the time. For this kind of music, for whatever reason, the Kemper kind of just does the trick. The Kemper and now, these plugins. So that's what I would do. I had a couple profiles that I would always go to, ones that I knew took pedals really well. So there's some octave pedal stuff on there. There's some fuzz pedal stuff. That's kind of about it, though, as far as pedals. I use like the MXR Bass Octave Deluxe. Mm-hmm. I use the TC Sub and Up. There's this crazy fuzz by Walrus called the Kangra fuzz, okay, which is the Jared Scharf signature fuzz. I use that on a track. I used a lot of sounds from the computer for delays and chorus effects and stuff like that. There's actually kind of quite a bit of chorus on this record. there's a seven string guitar on one track, you know. So
excellent. We are on March 1st, so we have plenty of time ahead of us in 2021. Sorry, what are the projects you are working on? I guess you don't have a lot of visibility on when you are going to be able to go back on the road. So, what's next for you?
Well, thankfully, gigs and shows here in Dallas, Fort Worth area are starting to open up. So my group is playing like once a month. Between Dallas and Fort Worth, there's a couple really nice little kind of like listening room clubs where we can set up a quartet and play all pretty anything we want. I mean, we can play loud and aggressive and fast and all that. So we'll do all of my solo material at these gigs once a month. Let's see. Yeah, so the record comes out April 16th. I don't have any tours, but I think the North Sea Jazz Festival is still happening this year, and we were scheduled to play it last year. So I guess if they'll move us around and get to do it this year, then maybe we'll hopefully do some kind of a tour in Europe. I don't know if that's going to be a thing. I know it's coming up pretty quick, mm-hmm. but, you know, hopefully by the fall, things will start to smooth out to where there's more consistency in performing shows. But thankfully, I'm, like I said, I'm still very busy with session work.
Excellent.
And all the other kind of, you know, stuff I do. So
if people want to get in touch with you, maybe to have you play on their record, how can they reach you? Is that through your website?
Yep. Yeah. There's a, that's this contact, and you just, you can, you can either, you can email, the management or, you know, me, it goes, we all see the same email. So, totally easy to get a hold of me.
Any, Snarky Puppy, new project, on the line too, or?
Not that I know of.
Okay.
Hopefully soon. There's talk about some possible recordings, in the fall. So we'll see what the status is of that. But, you know, everyone in that band, I think is doing their own stuff right now. So if you need a snarky fix, just check out what the individual players are doing, because everyone's got a record or five mm-hmm. out. So
excellent. Mark, thank you very much for the time. It was great to be able to do that. Hopefully
thank you too.
Next time we'll meet, I don't know, at the next Winter Nam, or maybe if you are around in Europe and you will come here at the showroom and we'll do another Guitar in Hand interview face to face. Okay.
That'd be really fun. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much for your time, and congratulations for The Baritone Session Volume 2 releasing on April
16th.
April 16th. All right. Thank you very much, Mark. Bye-bye.
All right. Merci. Bye-bye.
Merci. Bye-bye. For the price of a magazine, subscribe to The Guitar Channel to access the full videos.